Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 354. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to an ancient country almost ready for tourism, with mist-filled valleys full of pagodas, but also difficult roads and difficult bureaucracy. Today, we go to Myanmar. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. If you run a tourism company, get ready because the Chinese are coming. Last year, they doubled the amount that they spend on foreign trips to $85 billion, and that puts them third behind Germany and the U.S. in the world for tourism dollars spent. And our second story, Zipcar, and you may not know Zipcar. Zipcar is a company where you can rent a car, but not like the usual rent-a-cars, because you can rent it for an hour or two if you just live in the city and want a car to get groceries or run some errand, has just been purchased, and they've been purchased by Avis Rent-A-Car. And in the third story, you're going to have high expectations the next time you fly Virgin Atlantic if you've seen their new ad. Their new ad, which is a YouTube video, implies that the people who work at Virgin Atlantic may have been born for a greater purpose, that they may have some sort of flight attendant superpowers. It is a cute ad. I think you'll enjoy it, but don't let it set your expectations. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Dustin Main from skinnybackpacker.com, who's come to the show to talk to us about Myanmar. Dustin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
It's good to finally have you on. So the first thing we should talk about is, what is the name of the country we're going to be talking about?
Well, that's its own story itself, and the Cliff Notes version of it is the official name is Myanmar, and it changed a little over 20 years ago. But the way that the government, the sort of military government at the time, changed the name left most of the Western world to sort of call it by the original name, Burma. And so what you find is that if you're doing research online, you're buying a book, sometimes you see Burma, sometimes you see Myanmar. But because the name change happened about 20 years ago, most of the people inside the country refer to it as Myanmar, and they refer to the language as Myanmar language rather than Burma or Burmese. You still hear a little bit of the name Burma going around with some of the older generation, or the generation that's a little bit more politically savvy. They'll still refer to it as Burma, but for all intents and purposes, I think we'll call it Myanmar.
Okay. And for those of you who haven't been with the Amateur Traveler that long, we have done a show before on Myanmar, but it has been a little while, and also some things have changed in the country, and so it seemed like a good time to come back to that destination. So let's start with, why should someone go to Myanmar?
Well, Myanmar is very quickly becoming a very, very hot destination for years because of the military government that had been and sort of still is running the show there. A lot of Western countries didn't recommend that people traveled there. And the democratic opposition in the country, it even put a tourism boycott out there a few years ago. So over the last few years, very, very few people have been to the country. But as some more recent things have happened, particularly in the last 18 months, most prominently was when President Obama actually came to visit just about a month ago in November. It's quickly going on the map as a tourism destination in Asia that is fairly untouched and where you can avoid the crowds of an Angkor Wat or the beaches in Thailand and get a more real experience, I guess you could say.
Okay. And then what kind of itinerary would you recommend for someone coming to the country for, say, a week or two?
Well, there's a main itinerary that I would say that 90% of travelers go to. And in fact, on your previous podcast, that was sort of the itinerary that was talked about. And it's the Yangon, Bagan, Mandalay, and Inle Lake route. It's sort of like the big four of Myanmar. And because it's been talked about before, I won't touch on it too much. But because Myanmar has become such a hot place so quickly, particularly in the last even few months, there's actually a lot of problems with getting accommodation. The infrastructure isn't ready for the amount of people that are trying to come into the country. So what I've put together here, I've spent about 3 months of the last year in the country, traveling around, visiting different places. And so I put it together a bit of a little bit more of an off the beaten track, but one that's definitely doable and to still get that Myanmar experience that people are looking for, where you can be walking around and be one of only a couple of tourists in town, but the friendly people make it so then you always feel at home.
And you mentioned it as a hot destination. We could take that one of two ways, both of which are true. What is the best time of year to go to Myanmar?
Well, when it comes to hot temperature, it's best to avoid the hot temperatures in Myanmar. So the best time to go would be October through February. And with those shoulder months, you can avoid a little bit more of the crowds, but you might get a little bit more rain and a little bit more heat. This time of year, in kind of the December, in some of the mountain areas, it'll be getting pretty chilly at night, jacket weather. Myanmar's close to the equator, and particularly the low-lying areas, gets to be really, really hot. So particularly in the summer, it's unwieldingly hot. And in the rainy season, there'll be a lot of roads that can't even be passed. So the big season, October through February, November through January, those are the definitely the best times.
And you say it's near the equator. We probably should put it on a map just in case someone doesn't know that. But basically, we're talking about a country in between Thailand and Bangladesh and India.
And India and China and Laos, it borders a lot of countries, which makes it pretty special. It's like a mix and mash of a lot of the other countries in the area as well.
Okay. So where would you have us start then?
For a great second itinerary, I've chosen a few places to go hiking to some of the hill tribes and visiting some of the quieter areas and places that are particularly different. I find that in Myanmar, kind of like the United States, you get a really different experience with the people and how they live in different places. So to use a stereotype, the people in Texas might be a little bit different from the people in Maine, for example. And in Myanmar, that's definitely the case, where because of these surrounding countries, you see a lot of different cultures from the surrounding areas. So the itinerary is very culturally based. So after flying into Yangon, heading up north into the mountains of Shan State, it's the most popular place for hiking. And there's a few fantastic destinations, Kalaw, Pindia, and Thipa, which don't see very many tourists. And you can hike and stay in these hill tribe villages where oftentimes people are still dressing in the same way that they did, their same hill tribe outfits. You can stay with the hill tribe families, eat their food, and really enjoy the surrounding in a place where you don't really see other people around.
And how does one arrange that? Is this something where you just head up there and hike it to the nearest hill? Do you get guided tours? Do you arrange your stay ahead of time?
There's a couple of ways to tackle it. It isn't the sort of place where you'd want to just hike by yourself, for example, overnight. Mm-hmm. Most of the people will not speak any English at all, and it shouldn't be something to put on them. Because of the way the country is still run, you want to make sure that you stay in areas that you're allowed to go to. Mm-hmm. So guides can be arranged when you arrive, typically even for next day treks, or some places will even allow you to do it online. Because of the lack of internet access in much of the country, it can be hard to arrange some of these things in advance, but a lot of that is changing over the last 6 months, and there's a lot more availability to plan something days or weeks or months in advance even.
And I'm assuming that when you got there, you didn't speak any Myanmarese, is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, Myanmar language is how okay. They referred to it.
They didn't cover that in the Saskatoon school systems?
You know, I must have skipped out on that class.
Okay.
And that actually brings up a really great point. The language, like a lot of the languages in the area, is a tonal language. So okay. For us in the Western world, it can be really tricky to get the sounds happening. But more than any other country that I've been in, learning a few of the words and using a few of the phrases pays off in huge dividends, because so few people will take the time. So picking up a Lonely Planet phrase book and spending a little bit of time before you leave, and then particularly just practicing with other people that you meet along the way, goes a long way into really how deep you can get into the country with just a dozen or so phrases, like the hello, how are you, and thank you very much, the numbers, those sorts of things.
Okay.
So in terms of the actual trekking itself, you can arrange a guide when you get there or in advance, and typically you'll pay in the $15 per day sort of amount. Okay. And that will cover your food and your accommodation and your guide. And this is typically with a couple of people. Don't expect anything that's too fancy, more like sleeping on a bamboo mat in someone's home. But the hiking itself, not terribly difficult. And as long as you are in a little bit of hiking shape, nothing is too tricky, although some places might be a little muddy. So something for light hiking boots, I would say.
Okay. And you're hiking through jungle or through, you know, we say hills. So what am I seeing as I'm hiking along?
In this part of Myanmar, in Shan State, because it's a little bit higher elevation, there's a lot of the farming that goes on. So it's the vegetable fields, it's the rice paddies, things like that, rather than the rugged Rocky Mountain peaks. So light up and light downs, rivers, and maybe some small waterfalls, those sorts of things, but nothing too tricky.
Okay. And the same sort of terraced rice fields I would expect in, say, southern China or northern Philippines?
Yeah, to some degree, maybe not quite on such a grand scale.
Okay.
Think more lush valleys and beautiful vegetable fields, for example.
Okay.
So a couple of days in there, the big thing when you're trekking is just to avoid that rainy season. It wouldn't be a very good time at all to be there when it's muddy. You'd be losing your shoes in the mud. But in the dry season, fantastic. And easy walks that would be in the 4 to 8 hours per day. And those sorts of things can be arranged. None of these trails are set in stone. So just speaking with a guide, and the guides will typically speak fairly good English, and you can pick something that works for the amount that you want to go.
Okay. And then where do we go to next?
Well, so that's in the northeast, and it would be flying back down to the south. And this is another area that doesn't see too many people. And it's south of the Golden Rock. And the Golden Rock is a famous Buddhist temple and a famous Buddhist image. Most people don't make it south of there. And again, thinking about beautiful landscapes, there's a town called Mulimin, which is about the furthest south that you are allowed to go in Myanmar. And it's a sleepy little town on the river with hills on one side, and just a very, very friendly people and a mix of cultures between the Muslim and the Buddhist and the Christians. They all sort of live right in that area. So temples of old and new. And it was also a port city when the British were there. So Mulimin, a quiet place, particularly with culture. It's a cool and unique place that doesn't see too many people, but easy to get to from Yangon. And past that would be going to Pa'an, which is famous for limestone caves. And when you'd mentioned China earlier, the limestone karsts that sort of stick up out of the ground, that's what really comes to mind in Pa'an. So there's a few little mountains in the area, which in typical Myanmar fashion are topped by pagodas, golden pagodas, and caves filled with Buddha images in the hundreds or thousands of Buddha images. And in the surrounding area, particularly in the cooler season, lush green fields and beautiful reflections to be had in the area.
Okay.
And in terms of things that could be done that are a little bit more unique, don't have to be arranged in advance. The higher mountain in the area can be climbed in about 4 hours. Nothing too serious. It's paved the entire way. And at the top is a monastery. If you bring your own blanket, you can sleep at the monastery, and they serve free vegetarian food. You just pay for drinks and leave a little donation. And when the monks awake at 4 o'clock in the morning, you can hop outside while you're literally in the clouds and enjoy the ambiance. It's one of my top experiences in Myanmar, without a doubt.
Excellent.
When we talk about hiking, nothing strenuous at all. Like I said, it's a paved pathway up. It takes about 3 or 4 hours. And the landscape at sunrise and sunset is unbelievable.
Now, I noticed as you were going from place to place, you were flying.
We definitely would be flying. And when it comes to getting around Myanmar, there's a few different ways, but most of them are very, very slow and not terribly reliable. So if you have a short amount of time in the country, maybe a couple of weeks, flying is the best way to do it, or at okay. least most of the travel.
As you were there longer, were you using more local transportation? Was that more of an option?
Yeah, a little bit of both. When it comes to their train system is very, very slow. Thinking 200-mile train travel, maybe it will take 10 hours, 11 hours, 12 hours sort of thing.
Wow. Okay.
And bumpy along the way. So certainly not luxurious, but a unique experience. And the roads, although they're improving quite rapidly, they're still not up to par for Western standards. So again, they're quite slow, and the buses typically run in the nighttime to avoid the heat in the day. Hmm. And so oftentimes you'll arrive at your destination at 3 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the morning. So it can be a little tricky for someone that's new to the country to try to navigate the streets at 4 o'clock in the morning and try to find their guest house, for example. Now, you could also hire your own driver if you had more time. But because of the length of travel, if you're only there for a short amount of time, flying is typically the best. And the flights aren't too pricey. I'm thinking the $80 to $130 per ticket one way.
Okay.
Now, when it comes to arranging that stuff, it's hard to do that when you're outside of the country yourself. So a tourism agency can do that. Or when you arrive in the country, typically if you have 2 or 3 days notice, you can book a flight anywhere.
Now, I was curious when you were talking about as far south as you could go. I didn't have a map up at that point, but I've since brought one up. And there's quite a lot of Myanmar south of that, and quite a lot of islands and archipelagos and the sort of thing that in Thailand would have lots of beaches and resorts and such. But you're saying in Myanmar, you can't even go down there.
There's a few places that you can go in the area, but they have to be arranged well in advance. And through specific package tours with the Myanmar Tourism Agency. So a few of them can be had, and these are more certainly a few steps up, very luxurious, but in general, very difficult to travel in that sort of region. And to be honest, that's a sort of running thing with Myanmar. Most of the country, or at least half of it, is off limits to tourists, or at least much more difficult, permits that need to be planned in advance. And because of the political situation, things are changing all the time, and a place that you'd plan to go to before might not be available when you want to go. As for a personal example, this time right now in December, I was to be in the far north of Myanmar, and typically permits have to be arranged well in advance for this sort of region. And not only were they not allowing permits because of some infighting in the area, but they had revoked all of the permits that had been given. So in the places that we're talking about, travel isn't much of an issue, but it's always a good idea to keep up on the news, and you see a lot more Myanmar in the news now than you did a year or two ago, without a doubt.
Right, which still isn't a lot, but
okay. Which still isn't a lot, but much more than it used to be, for sure.
Interesting.
So after heading south and getting a feel for the laid-back area there and some of the beautiful limestone karst, we'd be heading west, and heading west near Bangladesh, actually, to a place called Sitwe, and an old ancient city named Miao. Now, as of actually right now, this place has been off limits off and on over the last few months or so, but it appears to be getting better. But it's something worth if you are thinking about the region.
And off limits again because of stability in the area politically.
Exactly. Okay. And nothing that has ever affected tourism, affected tourists in general. Mm-hmm. But the Myanmar government seems to be going on the far safe side. So Sitwe is in Rakhine State, which is in the far west, and it's sort of divided from the rest of Myanmar by a mountain range. So it's quite a bit different. The cuisine is a little bit different, and the people are a little bit different too. The biggest thing that you could see is that there's a lot more Muslims in the area.
Okay.
And that's because of how close they are to Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
So Sitwe, right on the Bay of Bengal, is very, very famous for just what I think is the most brilliant sunset in Myanmar, and a very, very active fish market, probably my favorite in the world even, that runs every morning as the boats are coming in with the fish and people are standing in the bay, literally buying the boatload of fish or the small amounts or inspecting. So it's very cool, and it's definitely like stepping back in time.
Very cool. You say the cuisine is different too. more of closer to an Indian cuisine at that point? Or I don't know what Burmese or Myanmar cuisine is, so.
Well, Myanmar cuisine in general is a bit of a mix from the areas around.
Okay.
It's not quite Thai, and it's not terribly spicy. It's not quite Chinese, although there's a lot of Chinese influences, a lot of Indian, particularly South Indian influences as well. And in Sitwe, because they're right on the bay, a lot of it is seafood, particularly fish. And one thing that will throw a lot of people off when they first arrive in the country is that the food itself is very, very oily. But just as an FYI for anyone happening to make it to the country, you don't have to eat all of the oil. It's just the way that they do it in the people in the country, the Myanmar people. Although they cook in a lot of oil, they don't eat and they don't consume all that oil either.
Okay. I said I didn't know what the cuisine was like. There is a Burmese restaurant actually in San Francisco nearby that I have eaten at, which I think is one of very few in the United States. But I'm sure most people have not had that experience.
Yeah, sure. And in the cuisine, if you look for the best of the best, it can be quite fantastic, but it isn't in the same vein as Thai, where it's a standout part of the country. It's a nice way to get a feel for the country, but it isn't the best in the region necessarily, at least in my opinion.
Okay. You had us flying in through Yangon or Rangoon and didn't mention much about that. Worth staying a day or two in the city to see that? I'm picturing a colonial city.
Yeah, it's a colonial city that's been run down. It looks like it hasn't had the TLC that it's needed over the last maybe 20, 30, 40 years,
okay.
Something like that. And it's a fascinating place that is changing very, very quickly. And by changing very, very quickly, I mean, this is a city that until about 6 months ago, 5 months ago, had essentially no new cars, no cars that were newer than about 15 or 20 years old because the import taxes were so high. And many people would still get around on a trishaw, which is kind of like a bicycle with a sidecar, as the most popular mode of transportation. It's a fascinating city with some of the most popular and most well-known things in the country to be had there. So that includes most famously the Shwedagon Pagoda, which is this massive stupa up on the hill, surrounded by many other stupas covered in gold leaf. And probably the most iconic image of Myanmar and a huge icon for Buddhists in general. So the Shwedagon Pagoda, definitely not to be missed, particularly at sunrise or even better at sunset. As the sun hits the pagoda, it just glows. It's quite the sight.
And if I asked you your favorite single spot in the whole country, where would it be?
For me, I would say it would be in and around Shan State, these hill tribe villages, which seem like they might be tricky to get to, but are very, very accessible with a guide with only a short amount of walking, maybe even just a couple of hours on sort of dirt roads, and sort of being transported back to a world where bamboo huts are the norm and people are tending to their fields by hand or by ox cart, taking their wares from place to place. So without a doubt, not to be missed.
Okay. And now you're standing in the prettiest spot in the country. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
The prettiest spot would be up in the mountains in the south, these limestone mountains that sort of look over the landscape. And haze is over the valley down below. And you see stupas, which you see everywhere, pagodas everywhere in Myanmar. You sort of see them dotted every direction you look within your view. There'll be one or two or more of these things that dot the landscape. It's quite the sight and something that you don't have to necessarily share with everybody else.
And can you put that on a map?
South of Yangon, maybe about 150 miles or so in the Kayan state is Pa'an. And the landscape there, particularly when you get up a little bit higher, is phenomenal. Seeing these in the flat valley down below, and you see these limestone karst mountains sort of popping up here and there and dotted with those pagodas.
Excellent. So I'm guessing there are some things about Saskatoon and some things about Myanmar that are different and some things that are the same. When do you feel most at home and when do you feel furthest from home?
Well, the easy answer is when do you feel most at home? And home for me is Saskatoon. That means family and friends. And in Myanmar, I definitely feel like the people there, my family and friends, learning a little bit of that language and communicating with the people. makes all the difference in a country like this. And on many occasions, I've been invited in for tea or coffee, or even to share a meal with a family. So in that traditional sort of small town sort of way, or inviting someone in, that's certainly the feel that I get from Myanmar.
Now, that you have to run out of 12 phrases pretty quick doing that. So you're doing tourism charades for the rest of the meal, or?
Definitely. And the other thing, again, more than any other country I've been in, a phrase book goes so long. So one of my favorite things to do in the country is to either walk around or bike around. And because Buddhism is such a big deal in the country, there are monasteries everywhere. And they're a friendly place to go to for pretty much anyone. So what I'll do is I'll just show up at a monastery, have a look around. They're always great for photo opportunities anyways.
Right.
And strike up a conversation, starting with my very, very limited Burmese, very, very limited. And then from there, just getting my phrase book out and asking them about their family or their job. And even though I might not know what they're saying, we can both look at the phrase book. They can read the Myanmar. I can read the English. And we can both try to pronounce it back and forth. And they love it. And I love it too. It gives you a much different feel than you typically get from a country where you're just looking at beautiful things. Now you're interacting and meeting the people and making friends that way, which opens up a whole host of opportunities.
And before you get to the other half of the question, the most memorable person you met that way?
In arriving to Sitwe, I found that there was a bit of a celebration going on. And so with someone's limited English, they approached me and we started talking and playing with the phrase book. And in a short time, I was taken to a very special celebration where they were taking a golden umbrella. And the golden umbrella is the part on a stupa at the top part, and it kind of looks like an umbrella. Mm-hmm. And this one here in particular was quite beautiful and quite famous. It was being taken around the country to show before they put it up on top of the pagoda. And by using my phrase book and meeting these groups of people, I was meeting these very famous monks and being taken around to all sorts of different areas that typically would be out of reach, and not only out of reach for tourists, but there'd be no way to know about them, places that aren't written about in guidebooks and aren't written about on the internet. So just by going that extra little bit and asking people a few questions and having them ask me questions, I was able to get me an experience like no other. An experience that would take me a half an hour to talk about. So I apologize for that.
And then the other half of the question, the time you felt furthest from home.
Without a doubt, the roads and the transportation in Myanmar is among the worst that I've been on. And so when you're biking along a very rocky and very dirty road on a bicycle that still uses technology from the 50s, it doesn't make for a particularly enjoyable ride. Some of the worst roads, and I use the word road very, very loosely, has to be one of the most numbing experiences in my life, physically numbing at least, at the end of the day. So it's not like the beautiful trails that we would have in many other parts of the world. We're talking dirt being kicked up and dust and rocks and flat tires and that sort of thing. So certainly not in the same vein as a Canada or anywhere else in the Western world, I suppose.
Excellent.
So when it comes to going to Myanmar, there's a visa that's required in advance. You can contact the embassy in your country to arrange that. But because so many people right now, so many more than normal and ever in the past are going, it's best to arrange that in at least a month in advance if you're going. If you happen to be in the area in the Southeast Asia region, you can get a visa in Bangkok in 1 to 3 days. But in the United States, in Canada, in other Western countries, give yourself at least a month right now to go through that visa process.
Okay.
There used to be people like journalists and photographers and writers and things like that weren't allowed in the country.
Right.
Now that's not really a problem at all. And many of my journalism friends and photographer friends as an occupation, they don't have any troubles getting in the country anymore. Although even just a couple of years ago, that was a problem.
Right. No, I think the last time we did the episode, I think that was a problem.
Yeah, definitely. When it comes to bringing in money, there are really no ATM countries. So you need to bring in essentially all of the money that you plan to spend. And that's best to be brought in pristine, beautiful American money, U.S. dollar bills, particularly hundreds,
oh my.
Euros, or Singapore dollars. And it used to be that it would have to be perfect, pristine bills. And this is changing a little bit now, but to be safe, before you come to the country, it would be best to go to your bank well in advance and get the nicest bills. And by nicest, I mean no folds, no tears, no blotches. And you want to keep it that way. So when you do travel to the country, put it in a book somewhere where they're not going to bend and whatnot. Because many places, even still now, if a bill is creased or smudged, they just won't accept them, or at a much lower rate than would be typically allowed.
Hmm. And how did you do that staying in the country for months?
Each time I spent about a little bit more, as well as a couple of shorter trips. So not too difficult. It's not a very, very expensive country, but to keep in mind for a lot of people, it's much more expensive than a place like Thailand. Accommodation, transportation is much more expensive and lower quality than you'd find in a Malaysia, in a Thailand, in a Vietnam.
So it costs more, but you get less.
That certainly is the case, yeah, okay. Without a doubt. And most of the prices in the country have increased, even in the last 6 to 12 months, have increased by 30 to 50%. And some of that is driven by demand,
sure,
because so many more people are going. But also the costs in the country for the people themselves are going up. So power and water, for example, have gone up 2 to 3 times in some cases. So keep that in mind when you're working your budget. Now, there has been something that is changing and it's going to a more open direction, but just recently, as of about 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, there's been one bank in Myanmar that has partnered with MasterCard. Hmm. And MasterCard withdrawals are now available from C Bank, which is one of the banks in the country. You can take about a maximum of, I believe it's about $300 per time. So if you end up running out of money, then that's certainly an option. But with anything in Myanmar, you should always have a backup plan. So bring your money and use the MasterCard as a backup, which is what I would recommend. And Visa has just signed a deal with three more banks, but those changes probably won't go into effect 2013. So when you come to Myanmar, think totally in cash.
Okay. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Myanmar.
Kind of a strange one, but there's something called a betel nut, and it's a nut that they chew. And it's a mild intoxicant. So think of a habit like smoking. Mm-hmm. But in Myanmar, this is very prominent, and it makes kind of this reddish juice in the mouth, and you'll see them spitting. And at first, it seems a little disgusting. But when you see the smiles, the Burmese people just have the most wonderful smiles. And unfortunately for the people that are the heavy users of the betel nut, their teeth definitely show it in terms of stains on their teeth and stains on their gums. And I just can't help but think that there aren't a lot of places in the world that are quite like this, where you have something that seems to the outside eye is quite disgusting and just followed up by the most beautiful smiles.
Finish this thought for me. You really know you're in Myanmar when what?
You really know you're in Myanmar when you are traveling to a beautiful place and there are almost no other tourists around, where you can have an experience in the country and not necessarily have to share it, or at least it doesn't feel like you have to share it. It's the special part of Myanmar and something that a lot of people are rushing to experience before the crowds really come.
And then last question, if you could summarize Myanmar in 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Beautiful, golden people. Excellent. Gold is the color with all of the pagodas.
Yep.
The country itself is beautiful, but in particular, it's the people that are just both beautiful and friendly and warm. It's a place unlike any other.
And where can people read more about your travels?
People can read more about my travels, in particular, my travels based on my photography at skinnybackpacker.com.
And Dustin, you and I talked about this beforehand. Can people who are not skinny also read your blog?
Definitely. Anybody that likes to look at pretty pictures will feel right at home on my Skinny Backpacker blog, without a doubt. People of all shapes and sizes.
And you said that you came up with the Skinny Backpacker when it was just you and your mother reading your blog. Is that the plan?
Exactly. So when I first started traveling about 3 years ago, the blog was just for my mom and not knowing what I should call it. I'm a pretty thin person genetically. And I was going backpacking, so Skinny Backpacker was an easy name for the time. If anyone has a better name, send me an email. Let me know what it should be. I'm totally open to it.
Dustin, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your obvious love of Myanmar.
Thanks so much, Chris.
In news of the community, I'd like to thank both Chris and Jesse, who left 5-star reviews for the show in iTunes. Chris said, "The Amateur Traveler is an absolute gem on iTunes. The variety of places that are presented is absolutely amazing. There is something for every type of traveler. Before I go to any destination, I consult with Chris first and then other resources. Keep up the great work." And Jesse said, "In the 2 years I've been a listener of the Amateur Traveler podcast, Chris has doubled my list of must-see places. Fun, comfortable interviews, informative guests, and a great show format. Thanks for bringing us a wonderful show, Chris." And thanks to both of you. It does help the show when people review it in iTunes, especially good reviews, or when you give a thumbs up if you listen to it on Stitcher Smart Radio. About the episode on the Sunshine Coast, Episode 353, Robert said, "Really enjoyed the Sunshine Coast episode. When one thinks Australia, one thinks Sydney, the Great Barrier, or Uluru. I had not heard about the Sunshine Coast. Australia is definitely in my bucket list, and now there's one more item in my to-do list. Always enjoy the show. Cheers." We've had a number of requests for more shows about Australia, so we have this Sunshine Coast episode that just came out, and actually coming up within the next month, we're doing another show on Perth. Jim responded to the episode on London, said, "Enjoyed this and looking forward to part two. My wife and I visited London years ago, and the high point was St. Paul's. I wanted to go there because I was a John Donne fan, and he was Dean of St. Paul's late in his life. There's a statue there in his memory, but the surprise was the American Memorial Chapel, which is behind the main altar. It's dedicated to the memory of the 28,000 U.S. military who made the ultimate sacrifice after being stationed in the U.K. In the chapel is a book containing all the names written out. The day we were there, it was open to the page containing my surname. Talk about chills. None were from my immediate family, but it was still very moving. 6 names in all." And Jim, thanks for sharing that. And again, we just recorded this morning the second part of that show. I think you'll enjoy it. It's going to be a little different from the first part. The first part was more narrative and a walking tour. The second part's going to be probably a little broader and a little less depth. So we're going to cover museums and nightlife, quirky things about London, markets, all sorts of things. I think you'll enjoy it. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or post on our Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, like Jim did, or leave a comment on this show at amateurtraveler.com. Oh, and I do want to say that I am planning on doing a show next week, but probably taking the week after that off because I will be in Japan. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. Maybe now.